very happy to welcome to the program our first guest this afternoon. You know him from a lengthy career in motion pictures like Breaking Away, A Wedding, Cars, Runaway Bride, television shows from The Defenders to The Practice, for which he was nominated for an Emmy Award, and Curb Your Enthusiasm. We are thrilled to be joined this afternoon by Paul Dooley. Paul, thank you so much for being with us.
It's my pleasure. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How's your day going?
I'm great. So far, it's terrific. It's about 72 degrees in California.
We would we'd kill a guy for that right here. It's been a tough spring so far in the East.
Yeah, I know. I've heard from some of my friends back east that there's been snow even pretty lately.
Yes, indeed. But we'll get by. It'll be fine eventually here, and we'll settle in. You have done so much in your life. I don't even know where to begin, but I guess the beginning sounds like a pretty good spot. And the fact that people may not be aware that before you got into acting and comedy, that you were a cartoonist as a young man.
That's right. It wasn't a very professional calling. It was mostly local, but I did have comic strips in my college humor magazine in my hometown paper and my high school paper. I was highly influenced by a cartoonist who created Snuffy Smith about hillbillies. Mm-hmm. And I'm from West Virginia, where they even actually have hillbillies. So my strip is about a couple of hillbilly guys, Zeke and Zeb.
You served in the Navy, and then you began doing stand-up along with some stage work, and you were quite successful as a stand-up comedian, several appearances on The Tonight Show, but not with Johnny Carson. You were on with Jack Parr.
Yeah, it goes a long way back. Once a guy said to me, who was the host? I said, I was on before Johnny Carson. He said, who was the host then? I said, Marconi. An inventor of radio.
We love Marconi in our business, absolutely.
Yeah, I did about 2.5 years of stand-up, and I really hated being on the road because I had kids at home, and, you know, it's lonely in the hotels, and half the time the audience is hostile, you know. I always did well in New York, and I played the Playboy clubs, and certain out-of-town gigs were okay, but sometimes they didn't know what the heck I was talking about. My act was a parody of Shakespeare. I'm not sure anybody knew what the parody was about.
Well,
but anyway,
you decided it would
had
be
a chance at some point in the middle of this tour of stand-up to join Second City, where I could look at another actor and see his eyes and do comedy with him, and I liked that much better.
Well, and that would serve you well later on in your film career and in television, where you got to work with some people who enjoy the whole art of improvisation, the idea that you go in with a blank slate, but you. I think this is such great training for any actor, because the whole idea behind it is to make your scene partner look good.
Yeah, that's right. And not be afraid on stage and never be nervous. I was. Everybody has a little nervousness about like an opening night or something if you're on stage. But once you've been 2 or 3 years in Second City, nothing makes you scared. You'd go on any night and do anything, and I would hope for a mistake in the script so that I could ad-lib, you know. I would love something to happen to the lines with other actors, because then I could improvise. It's my favorite thing. And, of course, I worked with Christopher Guest 3 times in a number of his movies, and I worked with Larry David, who improvises. And even Robert Altman, who did 5 films with me, and he admires improvisation, so he doesn't mind that at all.
Well, you also got a big help in your career from a guy who was pretty good at improv as well when he partnered up with Elaine May. Can you talk a little bit about the role of Mike Nichols in your career?
Well, I was went to an audition, and I was in Second City in the New York chapter at that time. And I heard once in a while that Mike and Elaine, either together or separately, had come in to look at us because they were living in New York at the time. And they're all... their whole background is improv, and they didn't always come backstage, but they would show up often with different friends, not together necessarily. And so I didn't really know that they had ever seen me. I just knew once in a while they came in. But when I went to audition for The Odd Couple by Neil Simon, which Mike directed, I did the reading of the normal pages you use for your audition. And he came down and he said, you know that thing you do at Second City where you're playing an evangelist trying to sell fallout shelters door to door? I said, yeah. He said, well, that was terrific. Could you do some of that for us? I said, I don't know, Mike. It's a matter of having the questions that the other actor, you know, doing it without the other lines that the other actor would give you. Because it wasn't an improv. It was something which had been created through improv and then became a standard scene. I said, it might be a little difficult to just do those parts without the other guy. He said, that's okay, never mind. So I say goodbye. I go out the stage door. I go out the alley. I'm going up toward the street. And it never happens. I hardly ever hear about this happening. But the stage manager runs after me and says, you got the job. So that was fun.
And you were an understudy for Art Carney, and then you stepped in when Art Carney left the production.
That's right. Art at that time was drinking, and he was a little bit of an alcoholic. And so once we arrived in New York, we had a little out-of-town tour for maybe 6 weeks, and he never missed a performance. But when we got to town, he started missing like one a week or something. So by the time I really took over for him, I had appeared like in a one-time only, a night at a time, maybe, I don't know, 10 or 12 times. So I was pretty familiar with the lines and everything. And then we found out that Art, he would miss a lot. And then he didn't come in, and they didn't come in for 3 days without telling us where he was. And everybody's concerned about him, and they couldn't find him. And they found that he had put himself into a rehab situation for his drinking, but he never returned to the show after that. But we did do about a year with him. But anyway, I enjoyed it very much. It's one of his great plays, and every time somebody opens their mouth, it's a laugh. The straight lines are funny, and the punchlines are funny.
We're talking with Paul Dooley here on Downtown. You also played an important role as a co-creator and writer for one of the great children's programs of all time, The Electric Company. I understand that you were responsible for coming up with some of those great names like Morgan Freeman's Easy Reader, Fargo, North Dakota. Those were your idea. That's fantastic.
Well, they called in a bunch of writers, and I never knew why they called any of us, but some of them had a history of writing for radio for ad agencies. And I had done a ton of radio with some of my partners from Second City, where at first we just improved people's regular writing on radio by putting in the final last line and making it into an ending with a joke. And we'd always make them a little bit better than they were. And after a while, we decided we're going to start charging for the creative part of it, the writing part. So we formed a little company. We did over 20 years, about 1,000 radio commercials, some written by other people, but mostly written by us, and all coming out of improvisation. We would improvise at home and write them down and take them in and let them take a look at it, and then we'd record them. But it became like mother's milk. We could do, in weeks, we could do, you know, 10 or 12 or 15 radio spots. And they were all Second City people.
And did you do, am I right that you did a commercial, and I don't know if it was radio or television, with one of your heroes, Buster Keaton?
That's right. And he's the reason I wanted to become an actor. Saw him on old films when I was 15, and I said, oh, my God. In addition to his great comedy and acrobatics, he's a wonderful actor without words. And I just fell in love with his character. And about 30 years later, I did a commercial with him for Ford Econoline Vans, played a Keystone Cop. Was one of the thrills of my lifetime.
You mentioned your association with Robert Altman, several films with him, starting with A Wedding. You were also a part of the experience on Malta, I believe, making Popeye, yeah, where you did an amazing job as Wimpy. What was that experience like?
Well, it was like living in another, not just country, but another world. The scene designer, who was one of the best set designs I've ever seen, created that town from scratch. There was nothing there, just a little bay. It wasn't even like a sandy beach on a bay. It was all rubble kind of rocks, you know. And if you were to walk on that area, you'd step down 2 steps and then up 3 steps and then down 4 steps. It was hardly possible to walk over it. So we built an entire town with not facades, but 4 walls to these houses. You had about, I don't know, 15 or 20 of them. And then we got new lumber from Canada and built it, and they all look brand new except the sagging roofs, you know. And then he aged them to look 100 years old, like a whaling village off New England or something. And it's just really, really wonderful. And the name of that town is Sweethaven in the comic strip. Mm. And when the actors talk about it now, or even any time during and after, we never felt we lived in Malta in the little bungalows that we had. We felt we lived in Sweethaven because we'd spend 12 hours of the day there and go back, go eat, and then go home to sleep. So we felt where we really lived was in this mythical town of Sweethaven.
Now,
it was just a great thing. There were 50 actors, and one was more talented than the other. And we got so bored with that little country where there's nothing to see or do. There's not one tree on it. It's a big rock. And so we put on a variety show at some point to amuse ourselves. And it lasted 4 hours. That's how many people contributed and how many people had things to do. And Robin emceed it. And by emceeing, he didn't just introduce people. He came out as somebody. He was Ed Sullivan, and then he came out as an evangelist, and he came out as an Englishman and a Frenchman. And, you know, he emceed it by coming out about 15 times introducing acts.
And Harry Nilsson was part of that group too, right?
He was there, and he wrote the music, and they were terrific songs. They have a kind of a childlike quality to them, which is appropriate because so many people who read the comics are kids. And, you know, there's a song that says, "She loves me, he 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 loves me." And all the repetitions sound almost like a kid's song. And Bluto sang, I mean, you know what I mean, I mean, I mean. And I thought they were charming, very, very charming.
One of my favorite performances of yours, Breaking Away, absolutely one of my top 10 movies of all time. That was just such an incredible cast. Dennis Quaid, I think, in his first role, Daniel Stern, Dennis Christopher. That had to be a wonderful experience for you.
Jackie Earle Haley.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's been my calling card ever since, because when I go to an audition, which I don't do much anymore, but I go to meetings to meet with directors, and the first thing they say, even though they might be 30 years old, is, God, I love that movie. And because when they were in film school, they probably saw it. That's what a lot of people have told me. So they're always complimenting me on my performance and say how much they love the movie. And I do think it was perfectly cast. And it also took an Englishman, the director, Peter Yates, and Steve Tesich, who was from Yugoslavia and came over here when he was a kid, to look at America and try to see what America culture was like in the Midwest, which I thought was amazing. They really pinned it down, and they're not even American-born.
We're talking with Paul Dooley here on Downtown. You mentioned the films you've done with Christopher Guest, and I understand you had a little connection to Chris through his mother.
She was my agent for a while.
That helps, right?
Yeah, Jean Guest. And also, I was in Death Wish for one, the original Death Wish number one, for one day shooting. And Chris, partly because his mother is a casting director and an agent, he had a one day part too as a young rookie cop. And then a little before that, somebody asked the Second City Actors in New York to do a thing for PBS, like an hour and a half show, using sketches. And they didn't want to do it with us ad-libbing on camera. People are afraid they're waste too much time ad-libbing on camera. And then they'll have a hard time cutting it because of the overlap. So they said, take 2 weeks and make up anything you want to, and then we'll film it. And so Chris Guest was in it for just a few minutes, but he was playing a guitar in the background, and he really was just in it almost like a day or two. But he was playing the guitar even then, and he had a few funny lines that he made up because the whole thing came out of improv. And that was it's called A Nice Place to Visit. It's about tourists, about people in New York, people who are visiting.
chance to show off those improv skills again, working with Larry David in a very memorable role on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Now, what did you get from Larry David? Obviously not a script. Was it just a setup of the scene and what was happening?
Not even a setup, just told you what the scene's about. And a script is for an hour show, let's say, might be 60 pages. And 30 pages for a sitcom, and this was like 6 pages. And it would be like a paragraph saying, I remember one of them said, Larry has gone to the movies with his wife, and he comes home, and his in-laws, and that, I was his father-in-law, his in-laws are there playing some sort of a board game, or playing something like Home Jeopardy or something. And I remember one of our lines was, is hard on a real word. Can you use it in the game of words? Anyway, the scene quickly descends into whatever he wants to talk about. In a normal improv situation, you're both creating the dialogue, and it can be your combined stories, but I always felt it was our job with Larry David to make him look good and make him go where he wanted to go, and we just followed rather than leading. They have a term called follow the follower, which means nobody's leading and no one's following. You just give and take until you have something. But most of the people who worked there just did stuff that would make it easier for Larry to be his character. So often we were just saying, come on, Larry, you can't say that. Because he was always saying the wrong thing. And people say, is he hard to work with? Because they think his character is hard to get along with. But the truth is, he's easy to work with. It's not in his interest to insult his cast. It's in his interest to keep them happy and let them enjoy themselves. So he's a very sweet guy, nice guy, fun to work with. And he accepts what he gets. He doesn't go say, let's do it again and don't say that. You know, he just knows he can chip away at it in editing anyway.
You did a one-man show last year called Movie Dad, because you've played a lot of dads in your career. You've played them in your real life as a father of four. What do you think are those qualities about you that have made you so successful at playing fathers?
I don't know. I don't know if it's a matter of having done it successfully, like beginning with The Wedding and went on to Breaking Away, and then not too much longer after Popeye, I did 16 Candles. And maybe it's just a matter of getting typed by the parts you've just been given, kind of based on your age or something. But I really don't have an answer why people think I'm a good dad. I guess I show a certain amount of empathy at times, but also I play cranky old dads, you know, who who you know don't get along with their kids.
But
it's true. I have about 30, and I have a list in my file called All My Children, and there are about 30 people I've been the father of, including Philip Seymour.
Philip Seymour Hoffman.
He was 16. I played his father in a movie.
I understand
and
your
I
own.
Thought,
your,
I thought later, if I knew how famous he was going to be, I'd have been nicer to him.
I understand your own dad, though, was perhaps on the stoic side.
He was. He was so much like the Breaking Away guy that he was always, you know, kind of, he was not a zinger guy because he didn't talk very much, but he was, he never smiled, you know, he was one of the hardworking guys in a factory. He used to come home and put his lunchbox down, go out to his workshop. An hour later, my mother would call him for dinner. But he spent very little time, as little time as he could with the wife or the kids. You know, he just he worked hard and he went home and to sleep. I rely on him a lot when I do characters, especially if they're not agreeable.
Well, we have loved so many roles throughout your long career. We are so glad to see you continue to be working, taking on great challenges out there. I know you got a talented family. Your wife is an awfully good writer as well. So we wish you a continued success and good health, and really appreciate you making time for us this afternoon.
Well, it's my pleasure. And if she only wrote one thing, she'd be famous. She wrote the musical Wicked.
Right. That's a pretty good start right there.
Now she's working on the screenplay of Wicked, which will come out in a couple of years.
Can't wait for that. Mr. Dooley, great to talk with you. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Same here. here. It was fun listening to you.
Thank you. It's Paul Dooley here on Downtown.